Good evening, anarchists everywhere, and welcome to tonight's Anarchism in the UK with me, Ian Bohm. Tonight's guest in the studio is Ed Lyon. Welcome, Ed.
Hello, Ian.
Last night you were on the Whitechapel Anarchist Pub Crawl, which sounds a useful means of political action. Can you tell us about the pub crawl?
Yes, when we set up the Whitechapel Anarchist group late last year, one of the things that we've been big on is the radical history of the area, from the Sydney Street siege, the Battle of Cable Street and so on. And so we decided to combine that with a bit of social activity by visiting a number of pubs in the area, starting in Bethnal Green, finishing up down the road from Lark in Whitechapel. And it went pretty well. We got about between 40 and 50 people with us at the end of it, I think. And along the way, the pub crawl was livened up by Martin Wright telling us something about what he knew of the history of the area.
And were the landlords rubbing their hands when loads of loaded with money anarchists came in?
It looked like Christmas come early for quite a few of them, yeah.
You're so involved with the Whitechapel Anarchist group. Tell us about the paper, which seems to be going down a storm in Brick Lane and stuff.
It's going down very well. We're just putting together the second issue of the paper. We got about 2,000 copies of the first issue done, which handed out down the lane, about pretty much all of them. We've only got a few left for the archive. And the way that we do it's much like the paper's much like the way that the old CW was done, with everybody contributing articles. And there's like a fairly fluid editorial group which gets together and sort of self-selecting from the Whitechapel Anarchist group. It's going to be meeting next week.
Okay. And what sort of reception have you been getting on Brick Lane when you've been handing them out? I think the police have been showing a bit of interest, haven't they?
The police have shown more than a little bit of interest in our activities, turning up to film us under their Operation Timbar, which is a police operation about youth on youth crime and related disorder. It did my heart some good to think I'm still regarded as a youth by the police.
or regarded as an enemy of the state. Yeah. That'd be a fine thing to be considered that. Around there you've got Freedom Bookshop, mm-hmm. and we've had Andy for now, but you've also got the London Anarchist Resource Centre. Do you want to tell people a bit about LARC, as it's known?
Yeah, the London Anarchist Resource Centre has been on Fieldgate Street now for something like 10 years, I think. And it's used by a variety of groups for activities ranging from banner making to conferences. And upstairs there's probably London's premier anarchist library, which I've been helping out in for about 5 years. We've got a special section there on Nestor Makhno. We've got books by and about Chomsky, Ward Churchill, Mike Davis, and a very good collection of books you won't find in any public library, and often for good reason.
Yeah, this book is dangerous. And what sort of hours? Do people just roll up and come in and borrow a book, or is that certain opening hours?
They'll get in on a Wednesday and a Thursday afternoon, between 1 and 4.
Okay, that sounds excellent. Well, between Lark and Freedom and the Whitechapel group, seems like things are starting to move in that area.
I think that it's very positive the way things have been going in the past 6 months. You've got Andy over at Freedom that you've already interviewed, and you've got Martin and me working at Lark. And so with the Whitechapel Anarchist group, and with what's happening further afield in London with the local groups, I think things are moving in the right direction this year.
Yeah, there's been a big initiative to set up local groups. I think there's one in Camden.
Yes.
Have you been involved in that, in the attempt to sort of help other local groups get off the ground?
Well, many years ago I was involved with getting Haringey Solidarity Group off the ground. And so that when I came to Whitechapel Anarchists, I already had some experience of some of the things that we were going to have to face, although I must say it's been an awful lot easier in Whitechapel than it was in Haringey, as everybody's basically got the same idea. They want to do stuff and not sit around and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there seems to be a general mood of cooperation amongst anarchists in London at the moment, which there hasn't been over the years. I mean, certainly over the years there's been feuds which have lasted for years. Do you sort of sense that spirit of sort of, there's a bit of a generosity of spirit, and they're willing to work together at the moment, there seems to be?
I think that people are getting on a lot better than they have done for a long time. And I think that a lot of this is, that there's two reasons for it. I think that people have seen what happens, or rather doesn't happen, when they don't get on. And also that I think that the people within the movement are just like, they've now recognised they've got a lot more in common than they do dividing them. Yeah. It's something that the spirit of sectarianism that you've seen in previous years has pretty much vanished, I think.
Yeah, I ought to give a plug here for the Red and Black Club, which is starting at the Calthorpe Arms in Gray's Inn Road a week today. It's going to be the second Sunday of every month. There's going to be an informal London anarchist social with a bit of discussion beforehand at 7:30 upstairs in the Calthorpe Arms. Hopefully that's going to be another way in for people to come into the anarchist movement. They can just have an informal chat and so on. OK, that's what you were up to last night. How did you get involved in politics in the first place, Ed?
Oh, when I was a teenager in the 80s, I was listening to a lot of punk music, and I was also read a lot about the ideas behind it and looking at what Malcolm McLaren and John Savage were up to, and then looking wider, further afield at the influences on them, so, which brought me fairly quickly to the Situationists.
And as a callow youth, did you manage to make sense of Raoul Vernagham and Guy Debord? Is it instantly intelligible?
No, but I had a lot of fun smoking the French cigarettes and drinking the coffee.
Yeah, I used to go about with Jean-Paul Sartre novels sticking out of my pocket trying to look trendy. I never read them, but they looked like it would be a smart move, yeah.
Luckily, things moved fairly quickly on from that, because, as I say, I was a teenager in the 80s, and then the first thing that I went on afterwards, my first demonstration was a poll tax riot.
Before we go into the poll tax, were Crass and those, did you come across them? Was that too early for you?
Crass and Conflict, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Were you wearing the clothes?
I'd prefer not to say people see me now.
You had your seditionaries, tartan bondage trousers.
No comment.
Trying to get him there, see if there are photos around. So, yeah, the poll tax. You were at the poll tax right in Trafalgar Square. Tell us a bit about your own experience on the day.
All right, well, on the day I went down on my own and saw massive people down in Kennington, and fairly soon fell in with some punks from Manchester who were advocating fruit liberation, which, as far as I could ascertain, involved shoplifting fruit and eating it. And
they advocated it but didn't do it.
I didn't see them doing it. But it was a beautiful sunny day at the end of March, and as we walked up to the next bridge down from Westminster Bridge, past Lambeth Palace, you could tell that things were going to happen because people were getting rowdier and rowdier. And then people saw the occasional can being thrown as we went up Whitehall. But by the time I got to Trafalgar Square, not much else had happened. And so I had a bit of a wander off. And when I came back, the place was seething with rioters. One of the first things I saw was a jeweller's being looted. Then there's a lot of running around and pushing and shoving, and an awful lot more windows getting put through, cars set on fire, Bureau de Change getting done over. But this wasn't by any means indiscriminate. There were small businesses that were left alone, while the big business right next door had every window smashed up. For me, the moment of the day really was being chased up the Haymarket by a copper and I vaulted over a fence. Coppers bounced smack down on the railing beside me, and he went off in search of easier prey. And when I looked up, there was a posh couple in their 60s, and one of them blazer badge and everything. His wife goes to me, what's going on here? And looked about, people milling about, missiles flying, cops everywhere. It's a riot. They can't do this. It's stopping us getting to the theatre. So it was a grand old day because all of a sudden, a lot of things came out of that, and I went on to where I am today.
Yeah, and it was certainly an exceptional day, an exhilarating day. So there was the poll tax riot. And where did you go after that? Did you get involved in the sort of the poll tax union movement then locally where you were living? Or
I did. I got involved with Haringey's anti-poll tax union a couple of weeks later when they had a public meeting near my parents' lived to set up a group. And although the Highgate group didn't leave that long, because the Stalinist and the Trot that were in it left fairly quickly afterwards.
The Trot.
moving over to Horne's anti-poll tax group, I went up to court to help people up for non-payment for the best part of 2 years every Tuesday and Thursday. And then when I moved to Camden, got involved with Camden Stop the Poll Tax. And so I worked with a wide variety of people in North London about the poll tax. And then, as I mentioned earlier, when the poll tax was abolished, people in Haringey set up Haringey Solidarity Group, and was there when in its early stages when people were discussing what they wanted to see the group do.
Oh, right, so it came directly out of the Haringey Anti Poll Tax Union.
Yes.
And it's going strong ever since?
It's still going, definitely. Lots of the things that we talked about in the early days have never came to fruition, for example, council monitoring and police monitoring. However, people in Haringey still doing a lot of very good work with the residents' associations and so forth.
And were you coming across specific anarchist ideas? There's obviously the community action stuff, but it's sort of anarchism, and were you reading the holy texts of Bakunin and Kropotkin, or you obviously met anarchists, but was anything influencing you were reading?
Well, what I read a lot of them was I started off by having a look at the ACF's organised at Class War, at the Direct Action Movement paper, and so that I fell in with the ACF briefly.
Just tell people what the ACF stands for.
The ACF was the Anarchist Communist Federation, which is now the Anarchist Federation, and I was a member there for about 18 months, and then in this time I started becoming involved with Class War. When I first got involved, there were dual members between the ACF and Class War, and I was fairly swiftly taken under the wing of a couple of the dual members and shuffled off towards CW.
Yeah, and you were in Class War for quite a long time. What attracted you to Class War in the first place, as opposed to some of the other groups around?
Well, what attracted me was that Danny, who was a member of CW in those days, he the first thing he said to me about CW is like they actually do things, which unfortunately I must have gotten in a rather stale period of the ACF because not a lot happened then. Whereas, like when I got involved with CW, this was just around the time of the international conference, an awful lot of things were going on. That it was an extremely exciting time to be an anarchist in London, and in the period between the poll tax riot and the 10 days that shook the world in '94, there were quite a few things. You had the Waterloo when the Blood and Honour got smashed off the streets at Waterloo. You had the Welling riot, you had the Criminal Justice Bill riot, and all of these, like Class War, was strongly represented.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the attractions of Class War was the action, and it was quite exciting and so on. And the other thing which seemed to attract people into Class War was the paper, going back years, the sort of populist nature of the paper, the tabloid nature. And did you actually play a role in getting the paper out and writing, or...?
Not in the early days, but certainly I've spent a lot of time writing for it and putting the paper together, so especially in recent years. The paper's always been a central focus of Class War's activity, and I think that it's still extremely popular, although since the 97 split, the group's continually been fighting against the rumours of its death, which a lot of people didn't think were greatly exaggerated. Even to this day, you've got people, I didn't know you were still going. But back in the 90s, when this was being done by a variety of CW groups from around the country, you had some of the best front covers, the John Major, Another 5 Years, You Won't Last That Long, and so forth.
Yeah, and the other thing was, you say there was a lot of sort of excitement and stuff of street actions and riots around, you know, the Criminal Justice Bill at Hyde Park, and I guess building up to J18. And were you involved in the J18 in the city? I don't want to incriminate yourself.
Well, J18 for me was something that was in a trajectory of action that surrounded the period sort of 97 to 2002 between the Liverpool Dockers March and the Golden Jubilee, because back then I was involved with the movement against the monarchy, and people might remember that on the day there was a mom rally in Trafalgar Square after the fun and games in the city. So I've been involved with some of the RTS actions, and so that June the 18th came in the middle of this, and I hasten to add that I didn't organise a sound system for the day. But it was... that was a period very similar to the early 90s when anything seemed possible, and certainly after we'd done Over the City of London, and you could walk from the city to Trafalgar Square without seeing a cop the entire way because they'd been beaten off the streets. That was for me, that and the poll tax rise, yeah, two of the best days of my life.
two great days. And it seemed at the time as though that would go on. I guess we just thought in a vaguely hopeful way the riots would get bigger and better and we'd be more victorious. And then after J18, things changed, the political mood, and also the police got their act together. And then there was a long hiatus when nothing much did happen, or people didn't really know where to go with what's going on, which to some extent is still the situation today, that the police tactics got cleverer and then people started getting kettled in and prevented. And we have not managed to really think our way out of that yet, have we?
Well, I think that one of the problems that we faced is that there's been a change in the political culture in the country where there aren't as many public demonstrations as there used to be. And so people don't get, for want of a better word, politically socialised in ways of dealing with the police, so that you are either on a small demonstration at which you're not going to come into much contact with them, or you're on another sort of demonstration where you get kettled in, and there isn't so much the learning curve that a lot of people, certainly of my age, will have had. And one of the things that the police have been extremely good at is with the, apart from kettling, is the introduction of the forward intelligence teams.
Just explain what a kettle is first.
All right. A kettle's where you get surrounded by the police and not allowed to go anywhere. The biggest and, worst example of this would have been at Oxford Circus in 2001, where several thousand people were held for about 8 hours by the police before being let go.
And you can't get out, you can't get any food, you can't go for a wee or anything. And it's all quite legal for the police to do that.
Unfortunately, it is. There's a recent judgment in the House of Lords where two people who were suing the police for the kettling in Oxford Circus, that they lost, and unfortunately lost badly, that they'd be much better advised either just to leave it and then wait or to approach the league, just to sue them for damages instead, rather than focusing on the legality of it, because you can't trust the courts.
You heard that here first, folks. But there have been some successes, haven't they? Or going for damages, there's the Fairford definitely. One, and there was the Man one. Do you want to just explain, tell people about the Man one?
Yes, it's in the June of 2002, when there was the Jubilee Day, there was a demonstration at Tower Hill where, I forget what was supposed to happen, but what actually happened was that after we'd retired to the pubs, the police arrested 40 or 41 people.
So in the pub, was
in
it?
In the pub, and took them for a bus ride all around London. And unsurprisingly, the 41 people involved sued. They won, and 18 months later, each of them received £3,500.
And would they sue for wrongful arrest or false imprisonment? What was the...
I can't remember. Yeah. Unfortunately, the girl I knew at the time, she brought her dog with her. Like, they wouldn't let the dog in, so me and her went home and, like, thus missed out on £7,000.
Missed out on compensation. Yeah. But the dog had got separate compensation, no doubt. Fitwatch, you're part of Fitwatch. Oh, sorry, first of all, explain the forward intelligence team, and then we'll talk about Fitwatch.
The forward intelligence team is a group of police officers who are tasked with monitoring who's at demonstrations, working out who the ringleaders are, who they think the ringleaders are, following them about, harassing them, and generally making their lives a misery, while taking pictures of demonstrators generally and putting them all onto a big database. This has been described by the Home Secretary as harassment policing, and they're now moving it not just in the context of demonstrators, but moving it to more social policing, or the policing of what they call antisocial behaviour as well. It's also been fit policing in Southampton, where on the weekends where they film people as they're going out to have a drink.
As you might, when the day I come over and help hand out the Whitechapel Anarchist paper, I mean, this wasn't a demonstration, it was just handing out papers, and there was police there filming, you know, people just handing out papers. They're really making it, I mean, people not involved in any protest don't realise how difficult it is to protest in this country now. The number of laws and policing tactics we use to get in. The FIT team seems a classic example of straightforward intimidation. And the stuff suffered from, I've seen it, where the police immediately say your name as soon as they see you, or hello Ed, or hello Ian, or whatever. But I've seen you personally put up some good and quite brave physical resistance to that. And also there's the counterpoint of knowing all the policemen's names now. We seem to have a lot of intelligence on them these days.
Well, we're getting more and more. There's moves afoot for the to curtail our activities. There's been a law passed recently which is attempting to make it an offence to gather information about the police. But I think they're going to have an extremely tough time enforcing that. And in any case, on the, when push comes to shove on a demonstration, one, it's not so much necessarily going to be so much about getting the information on the police as frankly, preventing them doing what they'd like to do, which is to gather intelligence on all of us and to intimidate us off the streets.
And you can just tell people, I mean, what FitWatch do is actually physically hold up banners in front of the police cameras.
There's a range of activities going from non-confrontational, which is probably just the photographing the police, gathering information and then putting it about on the internet, up to physical confrontation, where, as you say, people block the police cameras, people interpose themselves between the police and whoever they're trying to film, that they surrounding a fit team, following the fit about, because they really, really don't like that, and they don't like people standing behind them either. Shouting at them, shouting their names, whatever. I mean, there's a wide variety of tactics that have been used, and there's space on the continuum of tactics for people who are, for anybody who's opposed to this, whether they're simply up for irritating the fit, or if they're up for like seriously putting them at a disadvantage and forcing them to withdraw from the street.
Well, some of the people in FitWatch seem to get themselves arrested endlessly. What's the current state of play? Is the law changing, or is it just a question of are the police using different laws against them? Or?
Generally, it's Section 89.2 of, I think, the Police Reform Act, which is obstruction of the police. So far, there have been a couple of cases in which FitWatchers have been convicted. However, these cases are in the course of being appealed. And so that what happens far more frequently is an arrest rather than a conviction. And frankly, the people who have been arrested quite a few times, the police are spreading all sorts of disinformation in their briefings about them, and it's and they're subjects of like quite considerable police harassment. It's a very ridiculous situation where people who aren't doing anything wrong are being punished not only by court appearances, but also by bail conditions and being bailed to return when they don't necessarily live within London.
It is quite a sight to see the brave people in FitWatch standing in front of the police with banners and really not being pushed around and pushing back. I mean, it's quite physically quite brave, and it's done a lot to help a lot of other people resist intimidation, because it's a psychology of intimidation that they use, really, isn't it?
It is a psychology, very much so, but I think that they're not going to be able to use this that much longer, because for many years, we did our best to ignore the fit and hope that they'd go away, and that just simply didn't work. And now, push is coming to shove far more frequently, and it's not just the usual suspects who are doing it. Yeah. It's going to be like the march last weekend. Large numbers of the crowd showed their opposition to the tactics, the Ford intelligence team. And I think that this is something that's going to be continuing and growing over the next few months, that There's the real possibility for the first time of the fit having to be withdrawn, and the police having to rethink that any tactics they've got for like gathering intelligence on us.
Your protest seems to be very much, back in vogue. What with the Gaza staff, the Heathrow airport runway, and all that kind of stuff. There seems to be, but again, do you think there'll be some imagination and tactics to outsmart the police, or do you think the police will manage to maintain their sort of containment where they want?
Oh, I think there's two sorts of tactics the police have. They've got one sort for when they've got the upper hand in numbers, and one sort for when they don't. For example, the sort of tactics that you see that are best known from the poll tax riot, you'll see where they are well outnumbered by the crowd, as there was at some of the recent Gaza demonstrations. Alternatively, when they'll try kettling, and I think that people are starting to get better at seeing kettles before they fall. Mm. And it's that sort of knowledge that unfortunately only comes with experience that I think we're going to have to get spread out more. With things when they do try charging a crowd, I think that it's almost become a lost art for us about how to respond to that, because we're so unused to it. But I think that the people who put up a good fight against the police on the Gaza demonstrations recently shown that it can be done, that it's definitely possible, and something that I think other people are going to realise and learn lessons from in the future.
One of the problems which came out of the poll tax fight was when the police mounted this Operation Carnaby afterwards, trying to arrest everyone. So it was a time when you did something on a demonstration, you got away on the day you got away. But now your pictures appear in the newspapers, the CCTV everywhere. And even if you go sort of masked up, you're prepared for violence in advance, and that's used against you. So the CCTV and the footage is a real difficult thing to get around, isn't it?
Well, I think that the CCTV that its effectiveness is a bit of a myth. There was a senior police officer said last year that only 3% of the CCTV produced in evidence was actually worth anything. And I think that's probably true, because a lot of the cameras aren't going to be pointing the right way. They'll be dirty. They might not be working properly. And, of course, not all of them can see in the dark. And so the CCTVs, I think it's not good, but it's certainly not as bad at the moment as everybody thought it was going to be.
There's always scope for imaginative defences. As a classic in the poll tax, right, where someone was seen setting fire to a car or putting a lighted paper into a car, and the defence was he was actually getting the lighted paper out of the car. And the cameras weren't able to prove one way or the other, so they got an acquittal. So imaginative defence is always... I mean, how do you see the future of anarchism in the UK at the moment? Are you optimistic than you were, say, this time last year? Or where would you see things going at the moment?
I think that the way that things are going at the moment, where you've got people working on a number of fronts, but also broadly together, especially in London, that's going pretty well. There's a lot of scope for hard work ahead, unfortunately, but we're certainly putting the first foundations down for working much more as a movement and rather than a group of disparate individuals.
There's been street protests all over Europe, from Iceland to Latvia, and the Greek events had a big effect in London with the Greek solidarity. There was the stuff in Paris last weekend. People seem to be thinking it's coming our way. Do you think that we're going to see, you know, with the recession, do you think we're going to see stuff on the streets again shortly?
I think we will. It's something that we're to capitalise on this. We're going to have to, and to push it further, we're going to have to do some very hard work. I think that there's definitely the scope out there to repeat anything that we've done in the past, like to repeat stuff on that scale. However, it's only going to happen if people are actually prepared to put the hard graft into it.
And there's a lot of difference, isn't there, between the politics of protests and activists to actually something which is going to involve working class people in. And people who were rioting in Latvia weren't activists. They were poor people, hungry, and pushed right up against the wall of poverty. And there's no doubt the recession here is going to have a big effect. So I guess there's probably all to play for in terms of...
I think there certainly is, but I think that, as you say, there's a difference between an activist and a protester. I think that the important thing is that we don't fall into the trap of seeing activity for the sake of activity as the be-all and end-all of it, because the work that I think needs to be done is to actually form a focus for protest. Now, for example, there'd be no poll tax riot without the poll tax march. And so I think that's where we need to go and work on, and also to learn from our comrades abroad, who've shown, especially in Greece, in Iceland, as you say, in Latvia, how things can and should be done.
The one big opportunity, it seems to me, coming up is the G20 summit in London on April the 1st, when world leaders are going to come together to sort the recession out. So we're going to have everyone from Obama to Putin to Brown, and they're really going to try and decide on... And I think already there's huge demonstrations being called for April the 1st and the 2nd and the World Summit. Do you think that's going to be a lively weekend?
I certainly hope so. I think that it's got all the potential of it.
There's a chance there, I'd have thought, to mobilise far beyond the usual activists. Definitely. I think throughout Europe, we expect a lot of European activists to come over and organisations in France, this, that and the other. I think there's going to be a big rally, anarchist rally, on the night of April the 1st as well. So it promises to be a pretty good in. OK, Ed, we're up against the time there then. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Got you on the show at last. We'll be back with another Anarchism in the UK, same time, same place next week. Thanks a lot.